Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has said that the EU's Lisbon Treaty could come into effect in late 2009. A Czech daily has reported that a former candidate for the Czech presidency, economist Jan Švejnár, has rejected an offer to join the current government as deputy prime minister for the economy. Car manufacturer Škoda Auto in Mladá Boleslav has said it will limit production to 4 days a week for the first 6 months of next year. Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has said that the EU's Lisbon Treaty could come into effect in late 2009. The Prime Minister made the statement in Brussels on Thursday evening at the close of the first day of the EU summit. At the meeting, EU leaders agreed that member states will continue to have their own commissioner, provided the treaty is approved. As it stands, the ratification process remains stalled in both Poland and Germany, while the Czech Republic has yet to vote on the document in Parliament. The Czechs are expected to do so in the first months of 2009, after they take up the EU presidency. Meanwhile, on Friday, EU leaders agreed to provide a number of guarantees for Ireland to pave the way for that country to hold a new referendum on the Lisbon Treaty in 2009. That document was rejected by voters there earlier this year. The financial daily E15 has reported that a former candidate for the Czech presidency, Czech-American economist Jan Švejnár, has rejected an offer to join Mirek Topolánek's center-right government. The prime minister is looking to fill the post of deputy prime minister for the economy, newly created to allow for the better coordination of crisis measures in response to the global economic downturn. Lidové Noviny writes that the prime minister may also consider former Social Democrat finance minister Jiří Rusnok for the post. Mr. Topolánek is expected to announce personnel changes in the cabinet ahead of the holidays. A number of sources have reported that the current ministers of health, transport, as well as minority rights may go. The automobile manufacturer Škoda Auto in Mladá Boleslav has announced it will be scaling back production to just 4 days a week as of January 19th. The move is in response to the continuing financial crisis, and the measures are to stay in place until June. There will be no production at the plant in Mladá Boleslav, northeast of Prague, on Fridays, with the exception of one vehicle, the Škoda Roomster. Employees staying at home an extra day will receive 75% of their paycheck, plus daily bonuses, the company announced on Friday after negotiating the terms of the new collective agreement with union representatives. And turning quickly to sport now, in the NHL on Thursday, Pittsburgh forward Petr Sikora notched up his first NHL career hat-trick on Thursday in the Penguins' 9-2 romp over the New York Islanders. Pascal Dupuis also had a hat-trick on the night. Sikora has come close to earning hat-tricks before, scoring twice on 38 different occasions, but the key third goal has eluded him until now. Finally, a look at the weather into the weekend. It's expected to be mostly cloudy with rainfall. Daytime temperatures on Saturday are expected to reach highs of just 3 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniel Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, a blow for the shaky governing coalition. An independent deputy whose vote enabled the cabinet to push through important changes is leaving the lower house. We'll visit an exhibition dedicated to a century of Czech ice hockey, offer you a summary of the week's business news, and later on in the arts, 5 decades after his death, a huge 2-year project revisits the great Czech composer Bohuslav Martinů.
Martinů is not only a Czech composer, but he is an international composer born and educated in Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia.
All that coming your way, so do please stay with us. The fragile balance of forces on the Czech political scene has tipped slightly in favour of the opposition parties after Social Democrat renegade and later independent Michal Pohanka announced on Thursday that he was giving up his mandate in the lower house of parliament. This is bad news for Prime Minister Topolánek's shaky coalition government, which now has just 96 certain votes in the lower house. Once Mr. Pohanka is replaced by an MP loyal to the Social Democrats, the opposition will have 97 votes at its disposal. Although this is not enough to bring down the government, it will make Mr. Topolánek's cabinet dependent on 5 coalition rebels and 2 independents, whose price on the Czech political scene has just skyrocketed. I asked analyst Petr Just for his view on how much this could hurt the government ahead of the country's EU presidency.
It kind of stresses the status quo, which is today. We have a minority government that has not enough votes to push the legislation just by themselves, but we have also a minority opposition that has no strength to express a non-confidence to the government. So this leads actually to the situation where 7 or 8 independent members of parliament become a very important, strategically important group within the parliament, and it's actually all dependent on them, on their decision, how many of them will decide to support either coalition or opposition. From a long-time perspective, it's quite unpredictable how they're going to behave. So this situation, of course, makes it quite difficult for both government and opposition to do any moves. But it's, of course, much more difficult for government because the government has to somehow act, especially during the EU presidency, has to show that they have a confidence, that they have support, that they are effectively working. And in case the independents would start to act against the government, then it could cause some major problems during the EU presidency.
As you said, there are key votes coming up. How may this affect the ratification of the Lisbon Treaty, the vote on the radar?
The vote on the Lisbon Treaty would be probably less difficult than vote on the radar issue, because there is more people supporting the Lisbon Treaty, because there are at least some members of ODS who are favoring the ratification of Lisbon Treaty, although not now, but later in February, but it doesn't change that they are still for the Lisbon Treaty, at least some of them. So concerning the Lisbon Treaty, I don't see that there is any difference or that it has been changed by Mr. Pohanka's leave. But concerning the radar issue, it's much, much more sensitive, because Mr. Pohanka, he was against the radar, as it was said, but he didn't want to act against the Topolánek's government. Many commentators say that this was actually a reason why Mr. Pohanka left the Chamber of Deputies, because he was against the radar, but he didn't want to vote against the radar because it could hurt the Topolánek's government. But the member of parliament who will now succeed Mr. Pohanka, she already expressed that she's against the raiders. So the radar issue is still uncertain how it's going to be solved and if it's going to be passed or not.
So it looks like we're stuck with this status quo until the end of the EU presidency. What do you think will happen after that?
I would guess that this status quo will not be preserved only during the EU presidency, but this will be preserved until the elections in 2010. I don't believe that after the EU presidency anything major would happen. Actually, it will be just 1 year to the regular elections. Within the 1 year, no governments usually do any major important steps, and the whole political scene is less or more preparing for the elections. So once the EU presidency ends in June 2009, I think the pre-election campaign will start and last until June 2010, and nothing major will happen in both the coalition side and the opposition side.
Political analyst Petr Just there. Now moving on to something that Czechs are passionate about, ice hockey. An exhibition called One Century of Czech Ice Hockey has just opened at Prague's National Museum. It features photographs and documents from the history of the sport in this century, as well as valuable medals, jerseys and other memorabilia. Ian Willoughby was at Thursday's opening.
Victory at the 1998 Winter Olympics in Nagano would probably be most people's choice as the greatest moment in the history of Czech ice hockey. That history began a century ago in 1909, and Thursday's exhibition launch was tied to a key moment in the development of Czech hockey. Hanna Havránková is the curator of the new show at the National Museum.
Na den přesně před 100 lety byl založen Český hokejový svaz.
On this day exactly 100 years ago, the Czech Ice Hockey Association was founded. An interesting fact is that the man who established it, Emil Procházka, was quite forward-looking, and he himself had already become a member of the International Ice Hockey League at the time and had won recognition from the Austro-Hungarian authorities.
Byl uznán tehdy rakousko-uherskými úřady.
So when did ice hockey become popular in this part of the world?
Hned, protože nejdřív se hrál, jako hrál se bandy hokejkou, kterou můžete vidět tady.
Immediately, first bandy hockey was played using a ball. It was basically field hockey on ice. When we played our first international game in 1909 in Chamonix, our players tried playing with a puck for the first time just an hour before the match. Bandy hockey was superseded by Canadian hockey, which is hockey as we know it today, with a puck. It basically drove bandy hockey from the lakes used in those days and from the playing fields.
Vlastně tenkrát to byly rybníky a hřiště.
Hanna Havránková says there have been so many important anniversaries this year that the century of ice hockey exhibition isn't as big as it might otherwise have been. Nonetheless, hockey fans are in for quite a treat.
Nejcennější jsou samozřejmě olympijské medaile, velmi si vážně.
The most valuable items are of course Olympic winners' medals. As well as that, we've got World Championships medals and items which show how hockey became mixed up with politics, such as a banner that was unfurled by fans at the 1983 World Championships in Germany. Also, we've got a jersey worn by Jan Havel with a little sticker over the five-pointed star on our state symbol, which some of our players wore in a game against the Soviet Union.
Nastoupili někteří naši hokejisté v utkání proti Sovětskému svazu.
Also on show at the National Museum is a statue of the late Ivan Hlinka, who was a star forward for Czechoslovakia before going on to lead the Czech Republic to Olympic gold as manager. Hlinka, a true legend of Czech hockey, figures in a Team of the Century poll published in Friday's edition of the newspaper Sport. Winger Jaromír Jágr, the most successful Czech player in the history of the NHL, received the most points in the poll, followed by goaltender Dominik Hašek, winger Vladimír Martinec and defender Jan Suchý.
My thanks to Ian Willoughby for that report. Now, this being Friday, it's time for a summary of the week's business news, for which I'm joined by Dominic Yoon and Rosie Johnson.
Carmaker Škoda Auto is to cut production to 4 days a week from January to June 2009. The cuts are designed to help prevent staff layoffs as the economic slowdown affects the Czech automotive industry, heavily reliant on exports. Previously, the company had estimated an output of at least 700,000 cars in 2008, but now only expects to sell around 690,000 cars. According to a deal reached between management and workers, production will no longer occur on Fridays, except for production of the Roomster model, which will cease on Mondays. Škoda staff will be asked to stay home during the shutdowns and only receive 75% of their average wages. Additionally, Škoda will suspend production on December the 19th of this year over the Christmas period and will not resume production till January the 19th. The company has already interrupted production several times this year due to falling demand.
In related news, it's emerged that the Czech Police Service is offering jobs to laid-off workers at the Mladá Boleslav plant, northeast of Prague. The plant has already been forced to sack around 1,500 employees, but the situation is being partly mitigated by promises by the police and city authorities to employ several hundred of these workers. At present, the police services say they're short of as many as 600 staff in the region. However, concerns are also growing as many of those made redundant are Polish, Ukrainian and Vietnamese immigrants, and city authorities have noted an increase in homelessness in the area. Around 2,500 more employees of the Škoda plant are set to be made redundant in the coming weeks and months.
A new report from the Association of European Trade and Industrial Chambers shows that in most instances, Czech confidence in their country's business environment remains above the European average. The Czech Republic ranked 8th in the poll of 26 countries surveyed and revealed generally optimistic views from Czech entrepreneurs about the business sector, economy and banking sectors, despite a minor fall in confidence from previous year's figures attributed to the global economic slowdown. This is reflected
by the fact that the average confidence of European entrepreneurs is at its lowest levels in 16 years since polling began. The only area where confidence for Czech entrepreneurs is low, according to the poll, is in among exporters, who have been hit hardest by the economic slowdown. Estimates suggest almost two-thirds of Czech businesses are geared towards export.
The 2009 state budget, passed on Thursday by the lower house of parliament, will be heavily burdened by pensions payouts, according to new data. The figures reveal that while healthcare consumes only 49 crowns out of every 1,000 spent by the state, pensions consume 292 crowns per 1,000, almost a third of the entire state budget of more than 1 trillion crowns. The budget anticipates a deficit of around 38 billion crowns, though the finance minister, Miroslav Kalousek, recently conceded that this figure will likely go up as the economic slowdown continues to bite. Other expenditures presented in the budget are 67.3 billion to be spent on transport, 37 billion to be spent on infrastructure, 39.7 billion on agriculture, and 46.3 billion to be spent on defence.
Czech industrial production decreased by 7.6% in October, according to new data from the Czech Statistics Office. Transport-related products, mostly automobiles, which fell by 14.7%, contributed most to the poor showing, according to the figures. Indeed, the results are the worst since 2002. Other manufacturing businesses also suffered falls in production, including textiles, basic metals and fabricated metal products, and manufacture of food products and beverages. Manufacturing revenues fell by 7.9% year on year, while seasonally adjusted sales were also down by 7%.
That was the business news, and if you'd like to check out any of these stories, you'll find them at www.radio.cz. Now it's time to move on to a fresh edition of The Arts with Ian Willoughby.
We're listening to the second movement of Concerto for Violin and Orchestra No. 1 by the great 20th century Czech composer Bohuslav Martinů, performed by the Czech Philharmonic, featuring this man, violinist Josef Suk.
I love the music of Bohuslav Martinů because not only that he was a pupil of my grandfather Josef Suk, but he is a great composer, and I hope his music will be more and more appreciated in the world.
Martinu's reputation will no doubt be enhanced by a major international project entitled Martinu Revisited, which was officially launched in Prague on Thursday night and will run for exactly 2 years until December 12, 2010. Marking 5 decades since the composer's death in 1959, it features scores of events, both in the Czech Republic and further afield.
First of all, I would say, why is it called Martinu Revisited?
Aleš Březina, a noted composer in his own right, is from the Martinu Institute and is the man behind what's really a huge project.
The name is in English. We hadn't looked for a Czech equivalent to it because Martinu is not only a Czech composer, but he is an international composer born and educated in Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia, but who lived for a long part of his life in France before the Second World War, and then in the United States. He became American citizen at the beginning of 1950s, and he spent the last years of his life in Italy, France and Switzerland when he died.
The 2009 Prague Spring Music Festival will be dedicated to Martinu, while the national theatres in Prague and Brno will also stage new productions of his work. The National Museum, meanwhile, will dedicate a special exhibition to him. But it isn't just a Czech project. Many of the world's leading orchestras and venues are also taking part in Martinu Revisited, says Aleš Březina.
We tried to get in touch with concert organizers all over the world, but especially in the countries where Martinu lived, because we thought it might be good to renew his reputation in these countries. I would mention, for example, that at the end of 1940s, Martinu was definitely the most performed living contemporary composer in the United States. So it was every week a performance of one of the major work by Martinu by all the major orchestras in the United States.
Zuzana Ružičková is a legend of Czech classical music. Now aged 81, she was, for many decades, considered one of Europe's leading harpsichordists. Like Josef Suk, a patron of the project, she outlines her own relationship to the music of Bohuslav Martinu.
Martinu actually influenced quite a lot my whole life. First of all, I, with the arrogance of youth, thought when I was a pianist that contemporary music is nothing for me. The first time I played Bohuslav Martinu, I fell in love with him and then tried to find other contemporary music and was really very keen on it, so that I also found a wonderful Czech composer, Viktor Kalabis, who then became my husband. I wanted to graduate with Bohuslav Martinu's Sinfonietta Giocosa. At the time I was playing the piano. But I was warned by the dean of the faculty that in that case I wouldn't graduate at all. Martinu was thought a renegade and you know the whole story. And then I played very much the concerto and of course the solo pieces, and I played them until I stopped to play when I was 80 last year. So I really was in love with Martinu, and I had also several letters from him discussing with him the interpretation of the Sinfonietta Giocosa, which I also gave to the foundation.
And 5 decades after his death, do you think that he is sufficiently well known internationally?
I think it's getting better and better. When I started to play his harpsichord concerto, almost nobody knew about him. Everybody thought I was talking about Frank Martin. Nowadays, the name is very known, and the music gets to be known more and more, and I think the Institute and this Martinu Revisited project does very much for making him known more and more.
A few moments ago, Zuzana Ružičková said Martinu had been regarded as a renegade in Czechoslovakia. Aleš Březina explains why and also considers his reputation today.
I should start with the situation in the 1950s. When Martinu died, he was almost a sort of giant of the past, because at that time, in 1959, there was a politically complicated situation. It was the Cold War, so Martinu was being regarded in the Western part of the world as someone coming from now communist part of the world, and on the other side, in the communist part of the world, he was regarded as renegade and traitor because he was American citizen and he lived in the Western Europe.
Following the death of Martinu, his renown faded, partly due to developments in modern classical music. The fact his oeuvre was so unusually varied perhaps didn't help either.
He was partly forgotten, or he was remembered by only few works, and these works were different in the Western part of the world and different in the, let's say, communist part of the world, so that here in Czechoslovakia, for example, he was regarded as someone who used folk music to compose his symphonic pieces and his operas. In the Western part of the world, he was regarded as someone who composed a lot of spiritual or even religious pieces, such as the Greek Passion or the Mount of Three Lights. And it is only now, 50 years after he died, that these both views are coming to, let's say, more largely view or more proper view on his vast output of more than 400 pieces, and now different countries are discovering the parts of his output they never knew or they forgot in the last 50 years. So it's something that we would love to say in, let's say, 2011, that now Martinu is not only more known but also better known in all his variety.
For more on the Martinu Revisited project, please go to martinu.cz. And I'm afraid that that edition of The Arts has brought us to the end of today's program from Prague. But before we go, I'd just like to bring to your attention that Radio Prague has launched a Christmas contest, which entails filling in a crossword puzzle and hopefully winning a prize, a Christmas CD from Radio Prague. If you're interested, you'll find all the details on our webpage. That's at www.radio.cz. Should you like to write to us about anything you heard in the show, or offer comments or suggestions, or just simply to get in touch, then the email address is english@radio.cz, or you can send your letters to Vinohradská 12, Prague, postal code 12099. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today, and goodbye.